Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 77 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, 76 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features UK Mauritius Agreement. Will Tchekossians return home? Africa Now is next. Welcome to Sha Mwiza Muntali. The music in the background is Take Me Home by Jonathan Butler. First, let me take this opportunity to thank you all for your support of WPFW and Africa Now during our recent fall pledge drive. If you are not able to make a pledge during that time, you can still do so anytime at wpfwfm.org. Go to the Donate Now button and pledge your support for WPFW and Africa Now. Or you can also go to our Cash App, which is the $ WPFWFM. The Cash App is the $ WPFWFM. And of course, the website is WPFWFM.org. Together, we can build a better world one broadcast at a time. Over 50 years ago, Tchekossians were forcibly moved from their Indian Ocean homeland of Tchagos Islands by the UK to clear the area for a US military base on Diego Garcia Island. In exile, Tchekossians have consistently struggled to return to their native land and sought proper compensation for the destruction their lives have faced. In early October this year, 2024, the UK announced that it had come to an agreement with Mauritius and that the UK would hand over Tchagos Islands to Mauritius. But under the agreement, the UK maintains control of Diego Garcia. Also, the agreement is subject to a treaty by the parties involved. David Vine joins the show to dissect the recent UK-Mauritius agreement and what it means for Tchagosians. David Vine is a writer, collaborator, and political anthropologist, and is part of the organization Let Us Return USA. He is author of Island of Shame, The Secret History of the U.S. Base on Diego Garcia. David Vine's latest book is The United States of War, A Global History of America's Endless Conflicts from Columbus to the Islamic State. Here is my recent conversation with David Vine on the UK-Mauritius agreement and what it means for Tchekossians. David Vine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mwiza. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yes, it's been a while since we last had you on the show, a few years actually. But fortunately, we did have a member of the Tchekos Islands with us last year, Oliver Bancott, to talk about this issue. But I wanted us, before we get into the nuts and bolts or the weeds of the issue, if you could remind us where Tchagos Islands is in relationship to the continent, and so that people have an understanding of that island, because there's very little information that comes to us here, particularly in the USA, on it.
Sure. And you're right, far too little information comes to folks in the US about the Tchagos Islands and the secretive island of Diego Garcia, the island where the United States has a very large military base. So Diego Garcia is the largest island of the Tchagos Islands, which are smack dab in the middle of the Indian Ocean. They're about 2,000 miles from the east coast of Africa and about equidistant between the east coast of Africa and Indonesia. So very isolated, about 900 miles due south of India, among the most isolated islands in the world. And they're islands, like you said, that very few people know about, shamefully, I would say, because there is a shameful story that is part of how the United States came to possess a large military base on Diego Garcia. And that is the story, the history, in which the US and British governments forcibly removed the entire local indigenous people from Diego Garcia and the entire Chagos archipelago in the late 1960s and early 1970s. And the people were dumped in exile in Mauritius and the Seychelles and left there with no resettlement assistance. And for the last 50 plus years, they've been living there and struggling to go back to their homeland.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Mauritius, when Mauritius became independent in 1968, there was a feeling that Diego Garcia would be part of Diego Garcia and the other parts of the Chagos Islands, the Chagos archipelago, the proper name of them, would be part of Mauritius, an independent Mauritius. Especially when you're talking about the collusion between the United States and the United Kingdom, how did those islands get separated? Expand a bit more on the particularities of how they were able to remove those territories in the broader emancipation of the people within like Mauritius and the other parts.
Absolutely. The islands were controlled by Britain from the time of the Napoleonic Wars. So 1814, Britain takes the islands from France and controls them as part of the colony of Mauritius, which indeed, as you said, gains its independence from Britain in 1968. Unfortunately, and again, shamefully, Britain, as part of the negotiations for Mauritian independence, forces Mauritius to give up the Chagos Islands on the recommendation of US government officials who had identified Diego Garcia as a prime location for a future military base. And what US officials did after identifying Diego Garcia in the late 1950s and early 1960s as a site for a future US military base, they recommended to the British government that they, in the era of decolonization, create a new colony. And both US and British government officials understood this was explicitly against UN rules on decolonization, that you were not to chop up colonies as you were granting them independence, that is, colonial powers were explicitly barred from doing that. But this is precisely what US officials recommended, and British officials went ahead with the plan and created what they called the British Indian Ocean Territory. And they did that by, as I mentioned, forcing the Mauritian government, still colonized government, as they were negotiating independence, they forced them to give up those islands in exchange for £3 million in compensation, and basically presented this as a, you know, you get your independence and give us the islands, or you don't get independence. So there was clearly a power play at work, and Mauritian officials did, in fact, agree to give up the islands at the time, but in conditions where this was clearly not a negotiation of equals, as they were trying to gain their independence. This is exactly what came before the International Court of Justice back in 2018 and 2019. Mauritius, for years after gaining independence, began pressing to get back the islands, to making the argument that they were forced to give up these islands during the independence process. And the International Court of Justice finally looked at the matter in 2018 and 2019 and came to the overwhelming conclusion that Britain, the United Kingdom, was not and is not the proper sovereign over the Chagos Islands, but instead Mauritius is the sovereign over the Chagos Islands because they were taken from them improperly, illegally, during the decolonization process. So the International Court of Justice, followed up by the United Nations General Assembly, ordered Britain to restore sovereignty or to recognize properly, to recognize Mauritian sovereignty, because they ruled that, that Mauritius is the sovereign over the Chagos Islands. United Nations maps and other mechanisms of the United Nations then recognized Mauritius as the sovereign. And just in the last months, at the beginning of October, the United Kingdom finally, 5 years later, acknowledged what the rest of the international community had acknowledged for basically 5 years, that Mauritius is the sovereign of these Chagos Islands, that the United Kingdom is not, and set in process, set in the works a process to finalize a treaty with Mauritius, whereby Mauritius would formally take possession of the Chagos Islands, with one exception. And that exception is Diego Garcia, where the United Kingdom would continue to exercise sovereignty rights for 99 years to allow the US military base to continue to reside and occupy Diego Garcia. In exchange, the United Kingdom will pay Mauritius a yearly indexed rent and provide other support. So you see really the US military being one of the big winners here. The announcement from the United Kingdom and Mauritius at the beginning of October also said, and this was a great, if impartial, victory, that the Chagosian people, the indigenous people of the Chagos Islands, who were exiled during the creation of the base, can go back to all their islands with one exception. And that one exception is a major exception, and that exception, of course, is Diego Garcia. Unfortunately, most Chagosians trace their ancestry to Diego Garcia. So this is a major victory for them, that they can, for the first time in more than half a century, go back to their homeland, go back to their homes on all the islands except Diego Garcia. But it is very much a partial victory, because they are still now having the struggle to go back to Diego Garcia. So while this is a moment to celebrate for a variety of reasons, it's a moment to celebrate for the Chagosians because they can go back to almost all their islands. It's a moment to celebrate because the United Kingdom finally acknowledged and abided by international law and the findings, the judgments of the International Court of Justice and the United Nations General Assembly. It's a moment to celebrate, but also a moment to acknowledge that there is an ongoing injustice. If Chagosians cannot go back to Diego Garcia, they're part of their homeland, and where the majority of Chagosians trace their ancestry, where the majority of Chagosians have ancestors buried in the ground there. So it's a complicated picture, a moment we should celebrate, including for the decolonization of Africa and the decolonization movement globally. But it remains a struggle that will be ongoing.
And again, that's David Vine. And we're unpacking the recent UK-Mauritius agreement, how it impacts Chagosians who were displaced, as David has been talking about, displaced in the 60s to make way for a base at on one of the islands, Diego Garcia, the biggest island, in the Chagos Archipelago, Chagos Islands in the Indian Ocean. And it's seen as the last colony of the UK in Africa. But I wanted to go back unpacking a bit more on the military base, especially in these 60s. So just so that we, because we don't get this opportunity all the time, so to really get a really grounding of how, even though this is a UK issue, it's also the U.S. hands, fingerprints are all over the place, particularly in the 60s. We have to remember at that time there was the Vietnam War that was taking place and how that impacted this military base, how that was one reason why the U.S. kept pushing to have this military. Is that true?
It is one of the reasons. It is one of the reasons, but the primary reason actually goes back to decolonization. There were US government officials from the 1950s who were growing concerned that during the decolonization process, the US military would lose access to many of its military bases around the world. Since World War II, the United States military has encircled the globe with a huge number of military bases, more military bases than any people, country, or empire in world history. And that number has fluctuated over time, but beginning in the late 1940s, 1950s, US government officials were growing increasingly concerned that they were going to lose access to bases in European colonies, in places like Mauritius, but also North Africa and Morocco, around the world. And they began looking for possible replacement sites. And they specifically looked for islands, islands controlled by European colonial powers, where they could gain access to a future base site, and either by virtue of a rental agreement, or in some cases they considered just buying islands from European powers before colonies gained their independence and before US officials lost the ability to gain control of islands where they might build future bases. The subtext here, of course, is that US government officials didn't trust the leaders of newly independent nations. And it's, of course, appropriate and necessary to read the racial subtext there, that almost entirely white group of US government officials didn't trust the black and brown leaders of newly independent nations, and instead went off looking for European white allies that they could hatch deals with to build future military bases. Diego Garcia became the primary location on which U.S. officials wanted to build a base. But at first, they really didn't know how Diego Garcia would be useful. They just knew it was in a location that is, well, incredibly isolated. It's also relatively close to a large swath of the globe, from Southern Africa to the Middle East to South Asia and Southeast Asia. It's sort of equidistant to all those places. So it was a prime site for both an Air Force base and a Navy base, where the U.S. could deploy its military force in the future. There was some interest in Vietnam, but primarily it was, as U.S. officials described, a hedge against the future, a hedge against a future where they might lose access to bases. And the other reason that they were looking at islands in particular, they were looking for islands that had small local populations, because they wanted to avoid situations where that bases were facing increasingly, where there was a lot of local protest against a base. Virtually anywhere a foreign base exists, a foreign base possessed by any power, locals tend not to like to have their land occupied by foreign powers, by foreign militaries. And that leads to protest and other kinds of complications, irritations, tensions between the occupying military and local people. So U.S. officials were also looking for islands and bases where they could operate free of what they saw as local interference, local protest. And they, in the case of Diego Garcia and the Chagos Islands, early in the negotiations with Britain, demanded the islands without any local inhabitants. So what the deal they crafted with their British government counterparts was one in which the US government would pay the British government $14 million. And in exchange, the US military would gain access to Diego Garcia and a base there. And British government officials would do the dirty work of getting rid of the Chagosians. They would get rid of the Chagosians, and that is indeed what they did between 1968 and 1973 through a variety of means, beginning with cutting off food and medical supplies to the islands. And in the case of many Chagosians, who on a regular yearly basis would take vacations or in some cases had to seek medical treatment on the island of Mauritius, which was the closest hospital, full service hospital, but also where they took regular vacations that were part of their guaranteed set of employment benefits on what were plantations where they worked, coconut plantations. When Chagossians, beginning in 1968, when they went to Mauritius and then went to to get their return voyage home, they were told that by the steamship company that they simply were unable to return to their homes. They were barred from returning because the islands had been sold to the Americans, they were told. So Chagossians were marooned, left in Mauritius, unable to get back to their homeland with all their possessions, their literal homes back in the Chagos Islands, as well as their community and family members. As time progressed, beginning in 1971, British government agents, with the help of U.S. naval personnel who were on Diego Garcia and had started building the base there, began herding up Chagossians and putting them onto overcrowded cargo ships. These cargo ships were described by many Chagossians as resembling conditions found on slaving ships. People were packed into the holds where usually cargo goes on these cargo ships, and forced into the 4 or 5 day voyage to Mauritius and the Seychelles, where they were, again, just left on the docks with no resettlement assistance. I should also mention one of the most galling stories that I think touches many people's hearts, and I hope the entire story touches people's hearts, and it is a very simple one of a people who had their homeland stolen from them. And I think that's a story that resonates with many people who have suffered histories of displacement and dispossession around the globe. But during the deportation process on Diego Garcia, British government agents, with the help of naval personnel, rounded up the Chagossians' pet dogs and put them in cargo sheds, where they proceeded to pipe in exhaust fumes from Navy vehicles, gassing the dogs to death, and then burning their carcasses in front of the Chagossians who were awaiting deportation. And as one of the Chagossians' lawyers pointed out, this sent a pretty strong message about what might happen if Chagossians resisted their deportation. And it's important to point out, many did. From the moment it was announced that they were being rounded up, people said, this is our homeland, this is our country, this is our home. We don't want to leave, but they were forced to leave. And by 1973, the last Chagossian had been removed from the entire archipelago, and they have remained in exile now for more than half a century, struggling again to return to their homelands and to gain proper compensation for what they've suffered in exile. It is important to point out that one of the other victories of the agreement that the governments of Britain and Mauritius announced in October, one of the other victories was an announced trust fund for Chagossians, some form of what sounds like proper compensation. Of course, there, you know, the devil is in the details, so there's still a lot to be revealed about what that trust fund will look like, how it will support Chagossians, as well as what sort of resettlement conditions Chagossians will enjoy on the islands that they're allowed to resettle. That is, all the Chagos Islands except Diego Garcia. So a lot remains to be seen, including what the Mauritian government will do. It has promised to help Chagossians resettle the islands, but there are, of course, powerful economic and political interests in Mauritius, and we have to hope and assume the Mauritian government will prioritize Chagossians in resettling their islands. But there is, of course, the danger that powerful people and corporations and interests, including in Mauritius, will try to take advantage of this opportunity. So we have to continue to put pressure on the Mauritian government and the US government and the British government to ensure that Chagossians are prioritized, the people who have suffered this injustice, that their lives and interests are prioritized rather than those of corporate interests or, as we know is the case, the interests of the US military.
One thing that sparked my attention when you're talking about how the inhumane way the British government removed people from the island, from Chagos Islands, was, as you very well detailed the way they killed the pets and everything else. One of the other cynical things that the British government did was declare the area like a marine protected area, which is on the surface looks like a noble environmental thing to do, but it was really a cynical way of saying that there are no human inhabitants in this island.
Yes, this is a story full of cynical moves by both the US and British governments. And we've only begun to scratch the surface of cynical steps taken by both the US government and British government. And indeed, the British government about a decade ago announced that it was going to create a Chagos Marine Protected Area that, as you said, on the surface sounded like a great opportunity to protect the environment. But WikiLeaks released State Department documents showed British and US officials discussing the plan for a Chagos Marine Protected Area and discussing how this was the best way to ensure that Chagossians would never return home. So it was yet another in a series of outrages committed against the Chagossians, not a way to protect the environment, but instead a cynical way to prevent them from returning home. Thankfully, they have overcome that strategy of the British government, among many others, thanks in no small part to the International Court of Justice ruling in 2019 and then the United Nations General Assembly resolution that followed it and supported the International Court of Justice ruling. It is worth noting that in the October agreement announced by the United Kingdom and Mauritius, they announced that Mauritius would take over the organization and running of a Mauritian marine protected area for the Chagos Islands. And Chagossians, since this marine protected area idea was first launched a decade ago, have long said, we have long been the protectors of the environment of our islands, and we are happy to continue to protect our islands. So I would also hope, and Chagossians would hope, that they will play a key role in a Mauritian Chagos marine protected area in preserving their environment, which is, with one major exception, a pristine and gorgeous tropical island environment. All the Chagos Islands, have been basically untouched for half a century, other than yachties, as they're called, people with enough money to sail a yacht across the Indian Ocean who have stopped on the islands at times and enjoyed them, while Chagossians have been barred from going back to their homes. It's, of course, again, worth pointing out, this is just another one of many areas where racism colors this entire story. Who were these yachties? Almost entirely white folks who were able to stop and enjoy the Chagossians islands, while Chagossians have been literally turned around when trying to go back to their islands on a few occasions. The major exception to the pristine environment, of course, is Diego Garcia, where we know there has been substantial environmental damage caused by the U.S. military base of many, many kinds of environmental damage, well documented. However, it's very important to point out that the base only takes up about a third of Diego Garcia. Diego Garcia looks like a V or the letter U, and the base only occupies part of the left side of the island. The entire eastern side, as far as anyone knows, and as far as all evidence has shown, is unoccupied by the base and a place where Chagossians could go back and resettle, including the former capital of Diego Garcia. East Point is not occupied by the base. It's also important to point out that there are civilian workers who are living and working on the base on Diego Garcia. Most are Filipinos, some Mauritians, some Sri Lankans, and a few others. Chagossians could go back and live there, and for those who want to, work there today. There is housing available. So the idea that Chagossians can't go back to their islands, to Diego Garcia in particular, is absurd. And again, a tremendous injustice and one that must be rectified.
Listen to a recent conversation with David Vine that dissects the recent UK-Mauritius agreement and what it means for Chagossians who were forcibly removed from their Indian Ocean homeland of Chagos Islands by the UK to clear the area for a US military base on Diego Garcia Island. David Vine is a writer, collaborator, and political anthropologist and is part of the organization Let Us Return USA. He's also the author of Island of Shame, The Secret History of the U.S. Military Base on Diego Garcia. The music in the background is Truth Don't Die by Femi Kuti. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now back to the conversation. And as we're talking about the agreement and the impact on Chagossians, how involved were Chagossians in this agreement? When I look at some of the reports, it looks like very little consultation with them, and that's one of the biggest complaints. Of course, the main complaint by Chagossians, because this is their land and their issue, and they feel like they were not consulted at all.
That's exactly right. Chagossians were demanding to be part of these negotiations that have been going on for about 2 years between the governments of Mauritius and the United Kingdom, and they have been excluded when it, of course, is their lives and their islands that are at question in these negotiations. So Chagossians have been quite upset that they were excluded and have continued to demand that as the final treaty is negotiated and finalized, that they be included in and involved in those negotiations. As far as I know, that has not come to pass yet, but they continue to apply pressure to both governments to demand they be part of the negotiations, as effectively their lives and futures are being negotiated.
And you mentioned an important thing there, the word which I think, so that we fully understand where we are at the moment, treaty. The initial thing that we're discussing now is an agreement. So the treaty will be the fait accompli of the situation. Whereas when we're talking about the agreement, that can change any time, particularly if you have change in government within the UK. We just had a change in government recently in the UK. And of course, in the United States, we're just in the midst of a election, and that could also change from over the current party in the government could be the other party. So that's also something that will also impact this agreement, right?
That's right. And you're absolutely right that it needs to be finalized as a treaty. I'm sure people on both sides of the negotiations, as well as the U.S. government, which was clearly deeply involved in these negotiations and quickly applauded the negotiations, applauded the agreement, want to see a treaty finalized. There are, unfortunately, mostly far right, but right-wing Republicans and conservatives in Britain and the United States, who have been trying to hijack this deal and, for example, call on a future Trump administration. I hope such an administration does not come to pass, to basically torpedo the deal, to use a military metaphor that feels appropriate in this case. So we will see how quickly Mauritius and Britain, with the help of the United States, can finalize the treaty. But I think, given the victories that the agreement entails, my hope is that the hope of many is that the treaty will be finalized quickly. And of course, the treaty could involve true justice, which would include Chagossians' right to return to Diego Garcia, as well as their other islands, and spell out more firmly and clearly exactly what a trust fund will look like, and the rights of Chagossians to returning to and resettling on their islands, and ensuring that their lives and rights are prioritized, not the rights of, for example, economic interests or the military's interests.
And as we talk about the rights and the grievances of the Chagossians, how is the relationship between the Chagossians and the Mauritius government at the present time?
It's a long and complicated relationship, and there are many Chagossians. The Chagos Refugee Group, which is the group that has represented most Chagossians in exile, has long had a generally good relationship with the Mauritian government and helped the Mauritian government greatly in taking their case to the International Court of Justice. And the Chagossian story was very prominent in that case before the International Court of Justice in The Hague. And I think it's clear that Chagossian assistance was part of what led to the overwhelming ruling in favor of Mauritius at the International Court of Justice. So there is generally a good relationship there, and we will see as the Mauritian government faces choices about whether they will indeed make good on their promises to Chagossians to prioritize them and their rights and their resettlement of the islands. There are times where the Mauritian government has indicated that they are concerned ultimately that the Chagossians could assert a right to self-determination over the islands and a right to say, these aren't Mauritius's islands, these are Chagossians' islands, and we would like to have independence. And there are a small number of Chagossians, very small, who would like to have independence. The larger, but still minority group in the Chagossian community is one living in Britain that wants to maintain British sovereignty. Again, this is I think it's pretty clear, a small minority of the Chagossian population, and they're people who gained British citizenship through part of the long Chagossian struggle. Or they're often, the children or grandchildren of Chagossians born in the Chagos Islands who gained British citizenship and have been living in Britain for many years now, in some cases two decades or more. So there is some division, as in any community, and disagreements. But I think what has always been clear to me and part of research I conducted with Chagossians in 2003 and 2004, a survey showed clearly that the vast, vast, vast majority of Chagossians, more than 93%, want to go back to their islands either to live or to visit, And when they said they want to go back to their islands, they want to go back to all their islands, including Diego Garcia, again, where most Chagossians trace their ancestry.
And do you see Chagos people in Chagos Islands, Chagossians, going also bringing this issue up in front of the regional organization, the African Union, for instance?
The African Union has provided some assistance and provided some supportive statements both to the Chagossians and to the government of Mauritius and the people and nation of Mauritius over time. And it is certainly possible that the African Union could play a positive and helpful role in ensuring that Chagossians' lives and rights are prioritized. In resettling the islands, the African Union could play a role in putting pressure on the U.S. and British governments to allow them to return to Diego Garcia in addition to their other islands. So that's the largest role I could see. The other major question, I think, for the African Union and for all the countries of Africa is the question of the African Nuclear Weapons Free Zone Treaty, that the treaty that has made Africa an area of the globe that's been, generally speaking, free of nuclear weapons. The base on Diego Garcia has long been thought to been home to nuclear weapons of various kinds, including submarine-launched nuclear weapons. The base is a major location for repair and recovery of U.S. nuclear-powered and nuclear weapons-carrying submarines. So there's a question, because Mauritius is an African nation and part of the of Africa, there's a question about under Mauritian sovereignty, what is the status of this treaty? Mauritius is a signatory to the Africa Nuclear Weapons Free Zone Treaty. So if there are nuclear weapons on the base of Diego Garcia, Mauritius presumably will be in violation of this treaty. It's a signatory. So that will be a question for the African Union and other African nations to either criticize publicly or the Mauritian government. I am not an expert on the treaty and don't know what enforcement mechanisms exist, but that's a major open question. Or, you know, what of course would be best would be to prevent the U.S. government from using the island in any respect for the storage of or transit of nuclear weapons of any kind.
And has there been have the Chagossians groups, have they been working a lot with the NGOs or human rights organizations within the broader continent to make sure that their plight is known in the continent wide?
They have for quite a long time and have gotten tremendous support in South Africa in particular, I would say, but other parts of the continent, including NGOs and others working in Mauritius and in the Seychelles, among other places, as well as NGOs and human rights organizations around the world. Human Rights Watch has finally taken up their cause and their plight, as you said, in the past few years, and has done terrific work, including a terrific report that came out in the past couple of years and some great social media videos. So I'd encourage people to look at Human Rights Watch. You can search for Human Rights Watch Chagossians or Human Rights Watch Chagos, Human Rights Watch Diego Garcia. All those will turn up the Human Rights Watch report and the videos and other materials that they've put out. The Minority Rights Group is another international human rights organization that has been very supportive for a long time. And the Chagossians, a very small group of people. There are about 8,000 or so Chagossians, including those born in exile, that have been taking on the, you know, two of the most powerful governments on earth, the US and British governments, and have won these tremendous victories. The Chagossians need support from more people and organizations around the world, beginning in Africa, but really around the world. And I think, you know, as a U.S. citizen who feels, among other sources of shame, as a U.S. citizen, I feel a tremendous amount of responsibility for what my government did with and continues to do with my tax dollars to exile the Chagossians and maintain their exile to this day. The Chagossians still, of course, aren't home yet, despite the agreement. So we need to make sure that they finally gain their right to return. And one of the things the U.S. government can do, should do, and the Biden administration should do before Biden leaves office is there are a number of things it should do. Apologizing would go a long way, and Chagossians have asked for that. But even more importantly, the U.S. government and the U.S. military can play an incredibly important role in assisting with resettlement, beginning on the islands other than Diego Garcia, but on Diego Garcia as well. The airstrip and Navy base at Diego Garcia could play a really critical infrastructure role and logistical role in assisting with the resettlement process and rebuilding the infrastructure of Chagossians communities and villages in the Chagos Islands. So the U.S. government should assist with that and publicly state that it will assist with that, as well as paying for some of the trust fund that has been promised to Chagossians. The U.S. government has been the power behind the throne, the power behind the scenes from the beginning of this awful story. It was U.S. government officials who came up with the idea for a base on Diego Garcia. It was U.S. government officials who insisted on removing the Chagossians. It was U.S. government officials who paid the British government for base access and for the dirty work of getting rid of the Chagossians. And it's U.S. government officials, the U.S. government, who should contribute to bringing them some measure of justice today, both to help rebuild their society and to provide some immediate compensation, reparations to individual Chagossians, both those who were exiled, who are still living, and the descendants of Chagossians who were forcibly removed from their homes.
How can people here in the U.S. be in solidarity with Chagossians?
I've been working with the Let Us Return USA, which is the U.S. and North American support group for Chagossians, and it's a good place to find out more about the Chagossians, to learn more about them. LetUsReturnUSA.org, LetUsReturnUSA.org, and it's a way to get involved. The Chagos Refugees Group, again, the group representing most Chagossians in exile, I would encourage people to look them up online, as well as the Chagos Refugees Group UK, which has an active Facebook site that I would encourage people to look for. There are a variety of ways that people have acted in solidarity for decades now, and that's been a really critical part of the Chagossian struggle that has allowed it to achieve the victories that it's achieved. Although it is clear that Chagossians are the ones who have led this struggle from the beginning and have made the tremendous victories possible. They've done it by very bravely waging a struggle where they have gone on hunger strikes, they have protested in the streets, they have launched petitions. They have led a very long series of legal struggles against the British government in particular, but also the U.S. government and U.S. courts, European courts, the International Court of Justice. This has been a decades-long struggle that Chagossians have led and waged and won these really, it makes me very emotional to say they have won, really tremendous victories for quite a while, including the British citizenship, UK citizenship, but these the tremendous victory announced last month that, it's still not finalized. It's very much an incomplete victory, a partial victory, because Diego Garcia is as of now, excluded from resettlement, but it is a victory nonetheless, and one that should be applauded.
David Vine, thank you very much for being on the show.
Louisa, it is a pleasure to speak with you, and I so appreciate your continuing to call attention to the Chagossian struggle and the larger story of Diego Garcia and the Chagossians.
Been listening to a recent conversation with David Vine, which dissects a recent agreement between UK and Mauritius and how that affects Chagossians. Over 50 years ago, Chagossians were forcibly removed from their Indian Ocean homeland of Chagos Islands by the UK to clear the area for a US military base on Diego Garcia Island. In early October this year, 2024, the UK announced that it had come to an agreement with Mauritius and that the UK would hand over Chagos Islands to Mauritius. But under the agreement, UK maintains control of Diego Garcia. David Vine is a writer, collaborator, and political anthropologist and is part of the organization Let Us Return USA. He is author of Island of Shame, The Secret History of the US Military Base on Diego Garcia. You can revisit the full conversation on Africa Now's SoundCloud page. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. The music in the background is So Close Yet So Far Away by Jimmy Duludulu. That's it for Africa Now for today. I'm your host, Muiza Muntali. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shanana with Zain Al-Amin, looking at issues in Northern Africa and the Middle East, particularly the plight of Palestinians. And that's followed by the women's collective Sophie's Parlor, which is followed by The Browder File with Tony Browder. And that's followed by Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly. And that's followed by Kombit Lakai with Eugenia Charles, looking at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope. And thanks to our engineer, Michael Nicella. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers, Chanda Kozer and Funa Ngonda. And our Africa World Now Project collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erdersen. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW and to you for joining us. And continue to support all the great programs on WPFW. We're going to leave you the closing song entitled Galoup Bozan by Chagos Tambor Group. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week. And stay safe.
Galou bebo son pou de fam se gon bat mama o.
for WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Former President Donald Trump decisively won a return to the White House last night, clinching the necessary 270 electoral votes with a victory in Wisconsin. Trump also won the popular vote by a margin of almost 5 million votes as of this afternoon. Speaking to reporters in Florida last night, Trump claimed victory and called for unity.
America has given us an unprecedented and powerful mandate, and I'm asking every citizen all across our land to join me in this noble and righteous endeavor. That's what it is. It's time to put the divisions of the past 4 years behind us. It's time to unite.
Trump's speech was light on policy, but did feature several minutes of strong praise for billionaire Elon Musk, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and other allies. As of late this morning, Trump is ahead in swing states Nevada, Arizona, and Michigan, putting him on track for 312 electoral votes, surpassing his 2016 total. He consistently outperformed his vote totals and margins of victory in the 2020 election against President Biden, while Harris saw a decline in support. Trump is the first former president to return to power since 1892, and the first person convicted of a felony to be elected president. At age 78, he is also the oldest person elected president. The Electoral College is due to meet December 17th to formalize Trump's victory. The new U.S. Congress will then meet in early January to certify electoral votes and confirm the new president. Republicans retook control of the U.S. Senate last night, ensuring a smooth path for Trump to appoint a cabinet and begin nominating judges to the federal bench. The Senate must confirm roughly 1,200 of the 4,000 or so political jobs to be filled by Trump. A number of incumbent Democratic senators lost their seats, including John Tester of Montana and Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who delivered an emotional concession speech last night.
We may be tempted to say hope was not enough. We might be tempted to second guess ourselves and question whether we worked hard enough or long enough. That is not our story tonight. We believe that all work has dignity. We always will. We believe in the power of people over corporate special interests. We always will. We believe if you love this country, you fight for the people who make it work. We always will. This is a disappointment, but is not a failure.
Some key Senate races remain too close to call, including in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. In Michigan, as of early afternoon, Democrat Alyssa Slotkin was leading Republican Mike Rogers by fewer than 10,000 votes, or about 0.1%. In Arizona, Democrat Ruben Gallego is leading Republican and hardcore election denier Carrie Lake by about 60,000 votes, with only 60% of votes counted. Control of the U.S. House is still uncertain, with key swing races in California and elsewhere yet to be called. In Northern Virginia, the swing 7th District still has yet to be called, though Democrat Eugene Vindman is leading Republican Derek Anderson by about 8,000 votes, or 2%. Republicans flipped close districts in Michigan and Pennsylvania, increasing the chances of a GOP trifecta in the federal government. Hurricane Rafael is bearing down on Cuba and is forecast to hit the western portion of the island as a Category 3 storm, with life-threatening storm surge, winds, and flash floods. Thousands of people were evacuated, and schools and public transportation were suspended in parts of the country. Cuba has already struggled with blackouts after a separate hurricane 2 weeks ago struck the eastern portion of the island. Rafael hit Jamaica yesterday, causing flooding and landslides and knocking out power in some areas. Rafael is the 17th named storm of this Atlantic hurricane season. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 77 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City,